Would you introduce yourselves, please?
My name's Amelia.
And I'm Nick.
And you're in this, we'll get to this part, in this thing called...
Sylvanesso.
I'll do this in the full thing. It started with a remix of a song, and then it was, ready, hip-hop meets a cappella female vocals. You like that?
That's good.
Hip-hop meets a cappella female. There was a chance booking. Oh, yeah, and you named yourself after Swords and Sorcery, and that was the Sylvan part, and the other part wasn't a gas station, and blah, blah, blah. So I would like you to tell me a couple of things, each of you, that you want people to know. And by the way, you can lie.
The thing for us that I think we don't get to talk about as much as we talk about all the stuff you just mentioned is just kind of how much we both wanted to be in a pop band and how much we kind of wanted to reclaim pop for ourselves, I guess.
Indeed. Yes, I agree with that.
Pop is songs that become popular. Pop is not necessarily attached to a genre or to Gaga or Perry or Aguilera or any of that. Pop is about songs that get heard, right?
Yeah, well, I think it's also about accessibility. I think that's the thing that we were really drawn to, was doing something that was unabashedly attempting to be accessible to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. They didn't have to work really hard.
I think there's a cool thing that's happening where the definition of what is accessible music is broadening, but at the same time, a lot more people are able to make records that could be considered accessible and pop because of technology. Anyone can do it on a laptop now. We did this whole record in my bedroom. So those two things happening, I think, has made this really interesting time for popular music or accessible music, because it's anything could be a popular song now. Anything could be pop.
Everybody is in wonderment why this record's hitting the charts. Everybody's headline is like, it's hitting the top 200, and you're like, and everybody's like, wow, wait a minute, is that allowed so fast? And I think the fact that you went into this with exactly that particular idea of making it accessible, the records that tend to get there and do really well are not the ones, it's not that you didn't work hard, because I know you worked hard and I know you've got a vision and all that stuff that we're not going to bother with, but accessibility is also about really thinking about what you wanted to do, right?
Yes, exactly. It's about designing, like when you're writing a song, to try and design something that would sink into people's brains and stay with them for a
while. It's called hooks.
Exactly.
I kind of like, with me, it has to have a middle eight in some weird form, and it does have to have a hook.
Yeah, exactly. That's also, we were noticing that there's a prevalence of songs that don't have hooks that are really exciting to listen to, or like Animal Collective, for existence.
Right.
Very rarely would they throw a hook in, but when they would, it was amazing. Like My Girls,
oh,
their song My Girls,
which
is
week,
yeah.
Yeah.
Which
well,
is
and some, but they tried really hard not to, and then oops, they did it.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's the thing, you know, when they did. They made a pop song that you could really enjoy liking. You know, I think a lot of pop music, because of kind of the nature of especially AAA radio, kind of gets reduced to this lowest common denominator, both lyrically and otherwise. And I feel like when I'm listening to a pop record now, or you know, anything that could be considered top 40, I find myself just forgiving so much of the content just so that I can like it, because I want to like it so bad. Like I want to have, and we just want to do something that like My Girls, where like you can love that song, and the more attention you pay to it, the more it rewards you for paying attention to it. You know,
the deeper it becomes over repeated listens.
Yeah, it's okay. You're allowed. I like the fact that you had the same dance moves. That's, I mean, if there's any good excuse to form a thing, the same dance moves. So now we need a deep definition of one of the same dance moves. And how did that get, I mean, let's get to the really important stuff. How did that get discovered?
Well, it got discovered when Nick and I met at the Cactus Club in Milwaukee, when I was watching him open for my other band, Mountain Man. And essentially, the same dance moves means that we both get super excited when we're playing.
You know, I know it's not literal.
Yeah, no, we just both move around like complete dorks.
Yeah, you kind of dance without any moves. Like, you dance in that way that dancing is just an expression of your excitement at the time. You know,
it's kind of like the Pet Shop Boys, like domino dancing. Nobody knows what that really is, right? You hear it, but you're like, I like that idea of knocking everybody over while I'm dancing.
Yeah. Or the safety dance.
Safety dance. Exactly.
Kind of opposite themes there.
And the great segue there, and I'm about to see you for the first time, but the other thing that seems really fun is that even you don't know what's going to happen at the live show. That you've been quoted as saying there's lots of improv there.
Yeah.
So I suspect, and this is where I want to bust that move, pun intended, improv is about starting with the bass, and then if he starts to throw in, you know, one other extra weird sample that he just pulled up off YouTube at the last 15 seconds, not saying that he would ever do that.
Yeah, no, not saying that he would ever do that. But
oh, I just gave him an idea.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, there that is go. A good idea. But there is we both know the roadmap so well to all of these songs that there's a freedom that comes with that.
Yeah.
Just like with playing jazz music or
yeah, exactly. I've done a lot of way freer improv with other bands. I mean, I played in this band Megaphone for a long time, and this band that I play in still, this band Cedar AV, is just pure improv. But with this band, the improv there is just more. I wanted it so that if somebody really knew our record. I think so many bands that do this kind of thing, I've gone to see them and I feel like someone's just singing over tracks. It just feels like kind of a karaoke show, and that's really boring to me, and I wouldn't want to do something like that. So I just wanted to make it so that it was loose enough and I could change every aspect of the sound at any time so that if somebody really knew our stuff, they could still come and be surprised and hear something new or hear the song treated in a different way, and that we could change that night to night as much or as little as we wanted.
Oh, what a great segue. Every time that I go to see, and I've seen them since day one, and I've talked to them about this, Erasure. And I told this to Vince Clark the last time, because when he came in his Yaz, and I said to him, I said, you know, every time I'm with somebody and I'm seeing you, someone says, so that guy standing up behind the vocalist, what the hell is he doing? Because he's just standing there behind the computer, and occasionally he does this, and you kind of see him doing something there with the mouse thing in the middle, but what the heck is he doing? And I suspect that happens here a lot, that people go, so wait, she's singing, and he's there, and so what exactly is happening behind the curtain there? And Vince's answer is, are you kidding me? So I've seen that written up several times. So let's kind of clear that up a little bit, that a live show here really is a live show. Just because it is electronic in nature does not mean there's a track and you're just watching it go bump a bump a bump and you're singing to it.
Oh, definitely not. I mean, and I think that's one of the weird things about electronic music, or especially computer music, you know, when you can see a computer physically on stage, it's with a, you know, I play bass mostly. And when you go and see somebody play bass or any instrument that's a physical instrument, your brain, I hit a note with my hands and a sound comes out and your brain immediately puts those two things together. And you're like, oh, he's playing the bass in front of me. That's a really obvious connection for your brain to make. But with a computer, it's totally different because First of all, I'm designing the instrument I'm going to use. You know, I'm choosing what it can and can't do, all of those kinds of things. And everybody makes totally different choices. So there's a lot of push and pull there. At least with our set, everything's totally broken up. It's like the Erasure guy you're talking about. There's all everything's separated out, drums, bass, all these different vocals. I'm sampling her voice on the fly. I can change the nature of all these sounds. I have an analog synth on stage, all this different stuff. But the main thing, that's like kind of besides the point. Like the main thing is I wanted to make it so that every time you saw me do something, you could possibly, even if you didn't know anything about computer music, your brain could maybe pair it to some part of the sound that was changing. That I could make that connection at least a little bit more obvious to the listeners, to invite them in a little bit more and not make it this man behind the curtain Wizard of Oz type situation.
Yeah, either by using your physicality to show that, but also by making really crisp, serious decisions about the sounds that you were putting out.
Yeah, well, and making crisp decisions about the patch itself. The patch is what we kind of call the environment that I play in.
Sure.
Making decisions when building that so that there's a lot of things I could do that would make drastic changes in the sound that you would be able to see and hear at the same time.
Okay, I'm going to get evil here about that thing that ends with the word fork. because the 21-year-old who decided to be an erudite, I'm very important, I'm hip, I'm cool, I know everything, completely missed you. And your rating is irrelevant to me, but people do hang, there are people of a certain audience that hang on to that, and I'm the one who myth busts. But are you paying any attention to people that are already trying to put you in a category, a genre, a, this is electronic with vocalist and, you know, well, you know, former Feist this and Loops that and blah, blah, blah. Are you paying any attention to it?
It's super easy to decide to do that because you're letting other people dictate who you are. And we're just trying to avoid it as much as possible.
Yeah.
Just because also it takes a certain amount of bravery to do something in front of a large group of people every night. And it's, I don't need any more discouragement than the stuff that goes on in my brain. You know? That, or like, we're, it's really easy to come up with the worst insult you could possibly say to yourself and sure. repeat it over and over again.
That's
I don't,
what we do.
Yeah. Yeah, I really,
people anyway.
Yeah, I really don't need more of that from the outside world. And also,
keep it up.
Yeah, and also, I'm really, really proud of our record.
That's the main, I think that's the main thing. I, like, when I used to read reviews of stuff I had made a long time ago before I learned that that was a terrible idea and you should never do it, good or bad. I don't think it's good to read good reviews of yourself either. I noticed that the things that would make me upset about bad reviews were always things that I also was insecure about whatever we put out. So it was always the only way you could make me upset with a bad review was to be to say something that I kind of agreed with. And I think this was kind of the first time that I don't really care if you don't like it. Like, I think we killed it and I love I'm really proud of what we did.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think the more you pay attention, even when we were making the record, we kind of didn't show it to anybody. We just hold up because we figured when it's the two of us in a room working on this, that's when we started making the best stuff. And I think you have to continue that. I think that's probably true of most musicians that I know, at least. And you have to continue that as you move forward and once you're actually out in the open, because that's the only way to keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah. There's also a really strange trend in criticism that's going on right now where there's a severe lack of listening and a lot of assertion of the author's personality.
The end of every interview is, so, will your next album be like this? And are you going to do more of the same? And are you going to continue the path of synth-driven blah, 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 and pop songs that actually disguise sadness? And yeah, you can tell I...
That's
well, those are my favorite songs, and I'm not dumb. I know that every pop top 40 song that I grew up with, we're all dark. Yeah. And anybody who says we're not dark... So for all those people that are like, okay, you're going to go down the same path, can we just all agree that you are, but you might actually change the musical style and stuff? Or not?
Who knows?
Yeah.
We haven't started yet. We haven't started it yet.
Oh, come on. But you have to. You have to know your mission statement because that's what everybody's demanding.
Do we really have to know our mission statement? Like, because people want us to have it? I think that we've made a really good statement with this first record, and I want to keep on living through it until I figure out the next thing that we want to say.
What if you never make the dreaded sophomore record and change it to S.O. Sylvan and do something completely different? That'd be cool.
That would be cool. Or that idea is oddly relieving at this moment, but that could also be because I'm so overwhelmed by just the release of this record right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to take some breathing time and figure out what else we have to say, because there's no use saying anything if you don't actually know what you need to say.
Talking head style.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think with this one, I mean, something that I think drew us both to working together was just that these songs were the natural way that we sounded together at the time that we recorded them. And, you know, the last song on the record is I think, an element, a distillation of something that's in all the other songs. But it's a much looser, more textural representation of a certain thing that is in the rest of the album. But we wanted it to be last because we were really into the idea of the last song on the record being a question mark and totally leaving the door open. I would hate for somebody to hear it and be like, oh, I know exactly what their next record's going to sound like. I'd way rather have it be wide open and this, you know, open door so that whatever we sound like when we start recording again, I mean, probably very soon, can just be whatever that is, and at that moment, you know?
Your cover is blown. So I invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and here's what it is. It's two of your songs on the outside as the bread, and then songs by other artists in between.